It's time! Hey, Dave, listen up, please!
Scotty, that's a great question. I got a question for you, though, Scotty. You know that there's other players on our team besides Desi.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know. Something amazing.
Jones for three. And he banks it in.
Bailey. Up and in and a chance for three.
Welcome into the basketball podcast of Mid-America. Seth Kimball joined by Scotty Bordeline. And, oh, Scotty, it was a rough week for the basketball Hogs. Two losses to LSU and Alabama. Before you jump off the bandwagon, sound the alarm, and run down the street yelling fire, Scotty and I did say that it was possible that they could, the Razorbacks could lose both games last week, and they still have a shot in the NCAA tournament. We were saying that that was very well within the realm of possibility. Now, Scotty and I didn't necessarily know that the Arkansas Razorback basketball team would forget how to play basketball. But when you look at the record still states what we were saying last week. Now, when you look at the team on the court, you might have a few more question marks than we did at this time last week. But still, everything that this team set out to do is still right in front of it. All they have to do is, well, figure out how to put the orange ball into the hoop, Scotty.
Yeah, that was a real challenge last week. Like, it was pretty puzzling, I think. And, you know, Arkansas went into that LSU game third in the SEC in offensive efficiency, which is that's a place you want to be, right? Like, you want to be really efficient offensively, and then you want to be a pain in the backside on the defensive end. And Arkansas was neither of those things. Like, they didn't do anything to resemble like competence last week. Like, it was pretty puzzling overall. But I just made a post on our message board a few minutes ago. Joe Lunardi dropped his most up-to-date seed list entering games on Tuesday night. Arkansas is a 10 seed still. So Arkansas is, you know, probably toward the back end of the at-large bids at the moment. But as of right now, they're still in. And I don't know that Arkansas fans would be super comfortable with a 10 seed. Obviously, that would match you up with a 7 seed. And I can't find the seed list at the moment. I was going to go over who the 7 seeds were. But, you know, you get through a hellacious week, and ahead on the schedule is a pretty favorable stretch, I would think. It doesn't begin easily with Auburn on Wednesday. I mean, they're a completely different team with Sharif Cooper than what Arkansas faced on December 30th. But then you got Vanderbilt, and then you got Ole Miss, Mississippi State, you know, on the horizon too. And those are all very winnable games. I haven't been impressed with Ole Miss at all, really, this season. Mississippi State has been pretty good. I think they're 4-2 in the league right now. But Arkansas still, even as bad as last week was, they've still got a lot to play for. The rest of their season is still ahead of them. It's not like they got knocked off the NCAA tournament radar last week, even though what we saw last week did not resemble an NCAA tournament team.
Yeah, like you said, Scotty, everything that this team wants is ahead of them. You just got to figure out what is causing some of the woes in the team. I mean, Moses Moody played fantastic against Alabama, but nobody else did. Desi Sills seems to be struggling. And we're going to talk more about just the team in general in the segment later on in the show called Would You Believe? And so we will get, it's just a small tease there that we will get into some of that. But this is the point in the schedule where you are right now that if you do want to hit those goals, now you have to start winning. It's towards the end of January, MLK Day is come and gone, and this is when you got to start putting things together, and the Razorbacks are going the other way. They're not putting things together. And is this an issue of maybe this team not playing a tough non-conference schedule, or is this just a little bit of adversity hitting the team and they didn't know how to handle it, or is it something completely different, Scott?
Yeah, it could be a little bit of both. But you know that the non-conference schedule didn't seem to be a problem when Arkansas went to Auburn and when they beat Georgia at home. You know what I mean? Like, we can point to the schedule all we want. And the fact that, you know, they weren't really tested outside of, you know, maybe Oral Roberts a little bit. And Abilene Christian was, I don't know, just kind of hanging on the whole time until Arkansas finally put them away. But those are your two toughest games in non-conference. I think, you know, talking to some people over the weekend, I just think that there's some locker room issues, I think, with this team. Like, it's pretty clear. It was pretty clear last week, anyway, that this group wasn't connected in any way, shape, or form. I mean, do you agree with that? Like, it looked like none of the guys on the floor wanted to be on the floor with the other guys in the lineup. And then when guys came off the bench, joined the lineup, it just wasn't any cohesion whatsoever. And it's on the offensive end of the floor. I can get into some of the Hooplins numbers that I'm privy to, thanks to that subscription. You know, just what the offense and defense looks like with certain guys on the floor. And it's pretty alarming. And, you know, I think not all of the blame belongs to, you know, Arkansas's point guard play, even though Eric Musselman has said after both of the games last week that point guard play's got to improve. And he's absolutely right. Like, I wrote about it after the LSU game. Jalen Tate, JD Note, Devo combined for 4 assists and 8 turnovers. And I think shot 11 of 36 from the floor or something like that. Like, it wasn't pretty. Against Alabama, 4 assists, 9 turnovers. And JD, I think, finished with 5 points. Jalen Tate had 10 points, but he didn't get his first bucket, you know, until less than 5 minutes to go in the first half. And kind of like Eric Musselman said after the LSU game, like, there's some hollow stats. Like, some of Jalen's scoring was a little bit hollow. Like, it came after the game was well in hand. And Devo, I think, is struggling a little bit with his shot. I think he's like 2 for 16 in his last couple of games. He's got to be a little bit more under control. But I don't see a leader on either end of the floor. I don't see many consistent playmakers like JD. Note can create, but he's also very erratic. And, you know, Eric Musselman sat him down like he did with a lot of guys, and he said, hey, look, if you don't play the way that we want you to play, then you're not going to see minutes. And his shot selection improved for a game, and he played well. The last 2 games haven't been great. His turnovers have been there. Like, he had a couple just really careless turnovers. Like, he stepped on the baseline the other day, and then he dribbled into traffic a couple of times, lost the ball, and his shot selection just isn't great. And Jalen Tate, just, he didn't have a good week at all last week. I think he had 10 turnovers in the 2 games. And Musk said after the Alabama game that 2 of his 6 turnovers were probably not his fault, but that still gives him 4 turnovers in back-to-back games and 4 turnovers in 3 of his last 4. Which, that's just, you've got to get better production from your lead point guard. I mean, all those guys. I mean, it's on all of them, not just Jalen.
Yeah, I think that it is. And what do you do? What do you do with the production at the point guard position?
I don't know. And that something that's been kind of going around, like, I've been thinking about is kind of what we talked about last week and maybe the week before. Maybe you give Moses Moody a shot at that kind of that Mason Jones role where he's primary ball handler, and, you know, you run him off some ball screens and just see what you've got. Like, I don't know that they've done that very often at all. And one of the things that might not be the course of action for Arkansas is just that they're much better right now I mean, the offense is bad, but they're much better right now running half court in half court sets as opposed to in the flow of the offense. And Moses is the guy that more often than not that you're setting up in those set plays. Like that happened a lot against Alabama. Like we saw that quite a bit. And he was pretty effective. He was like 7 of 13 for 22 points early in the second half, and then he finished 10 of 25. And so that tells you, you know, when Arkansas just kind of threw the sets out, that, you know, Arkansas wasn't able to create, you know, much in the way of efficient offense. You know, just kind of out of the flow. It's tough. But I might just see what you've got with that, with Moses kind of running the point forward. And but then who do you put on the floor with him? I mean, I think you got to have, if you do go that direction, I think Justin Smith is the guy that is your screen setter. But if he pops, like teams are going to like dare him to shoot, because I don't think, he didn't make a three in December. And I remember writing that, you know, he probably needs to put the jumper on the shelf for a little while, and he gets hurt, and he's not, I mean, he needed a warm-up game the other day. That's what he's got, but he's far from back to himself. Like Musselman said, that he hopes to be, you know, kind of back to normal on Saturday against Vanderbilt. But you put JD on the floor and maybe hope that he can create. Do you put Desi out there? I don't know what direction you would go. If you put Moses in that lead guard spot, I don't know. I feel like what we saw last week, just there's a lot more questions than answers at the moment.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
No, I rattled on for a long time, but there's a lot to digest after last week.
All right. Let's move on, Scotty. Let's play our game. Let's play Would You Believe?
I shall be able to rip these chains from the wall in 1 minute. Would you believe it? 1 minute.
I find that hard to believe.
Would you believe 2 minutes?
I don't think so.
How about a week from Tuesday?
Okay, first question on Would You Believe is, as Scotty and I try and digest a little bit more of this poor week for the Arkansas Razorbacks, and then a big week upcoming for them with games against Auburn and then Ole Miss. Auburn and then at Vanderbilt. Ole Miss. All right, first question. Scotty, you already kind of hinted at this, but would you believe that Arkansas's issues are chemistry related?
Yeah, I think so. I think there are some locker room issues for sure. And I don't want, like, again, don't want to really single out a guy, but I don't like the body language that Jalen Tate has been giving. Sorry about that. Somebody's going to gripe about it, I'm sure. But I don't like his body language, and I don't like that he's all of a sudden kind of not playing like himself in the first 4 or 5 SEC games. One of the things I've started tracking this year are those assistable passes. I know I rattled those off to you or somebody recently. Jalen, we'll go game by game, okay? So, and against Auburn in the first SEC game, Jalen Tate had 15 assistable passes. The next game, he had 13. Next game, he had 9. Next game, he had 15. And in the last two games, he has 6 apiece. And so I'm not sure why that is, but I don't know. Maybe we're getting into the next point already in our little game here, but I don't like, we're seeing a little bit of attitude. I feel like when he doesn't get a call, he just kind of flops and flails on the floor, not really digging that very much. And I feel like it, like other guys on the team are seeing it. And I feel like Jalen Tate has been kind of broadcasted as a guy throughout the year, and probably rightfully so, is kind of like a voice on the floor, a voice in the locker room, a voice on the team. And that's just, that body language just tells you everything that you need to know. And then the other day, toward the end of the Alabama game, JD Notae is just kind of sitting on the sideline, just kind of slumped in his chair, looks a little bit disinterested. And I get that you're possibly disinterested in a 30-point game, but that just tells me that things are just not right. They're just not. And last week, I think, was a lot of all the evidence you need. They only had like 8 assists in both games. So guys are not willing and wanting to share the ball. Lots of individual play. They don't seem connected, not only on offense, but defensively. Like help side is not there. You know, a guy gets, as Jalen Tate said at one point, somebody gets wind burned, getting blown by off the dribble. There's not really any help defense there. And that just tells me that they're not connected. A little bit disjointed is probably putting it lightly. All of this could be really an overreaction if they had, I don't know, played semi well last week, but I just don't think there's an easy fix. Like the schedule lightening a little bit will probably help some, but I mean, if you want to compete in the league, you got to compete with the best, and LSU and Alabama are two of the best, and they just fell flat on their face.
Yeah, not a very impressive showing at all. I agree. It's some kind of chemistry, and your body language can tell a story that your words in your mouth can't. And Jalen Tate just gives off an aura when he's on the court of somebody that is not all the way there.
That's been the case throughout the year, because I think he's been a bright spot in several games. Like he put up a double-double like a week and a half ago. But when things aren't going right, like you've got to still think bigger picture, like rather than possibly bring the morale down.
It's something very recent. You are right. And Scotty and I aren't in the locker room to know for sure what's going on or anything of that nature. But this is just from observations from watching the team play, that it feels like something's off. Team chemistry wise. Considering and talking about Jalen Tate, do you believe it is time to give him a rest at the point guard position?
It might be. And, you know, I've thrown out that idea of just running Moses at the point just to see if that could maybe shake some things up offensively. But looking at like the Hoopland's numbers, like I mentioned earlier, Jalen on the floor last week, he was on the floor for 104 possessions, and Arkansas's offense scored 0.62 points per possession, and on the defensive end gave up 1.12 points per possession. When Tate was on the floor, Arkansas shot 35% inside the three-point line and 15% beyond it.
Jeez.
I mean, again, like I texted you that graphic yesterday, and I said a lot of like all of this is not on Jalen. But it's just, it was hard to watch last week because he's not a scoring guard per se, and he's more of a pass first guy. But when he's only giving you 6 assistable passes per game, I don't know that that's the direction to go at the moment. I don't know what the answer is, man. I'm sure Arkansas staff is trying to come up with something, and they probably will stick with him. I think Eric Musselman likes him a lot from a leadership standpoint, and he is one of the more selfless guys on the team, I think. And I think that's fair to say. You got any thoughts on that? I mean, those numbers were pretty gross, but that also tells you that Arkansas had a bad week. But when he was off the floor, 1.03 points per possession over 69 trips.
I think there's got to be cause and effect, right? You can't just say that if you're Arkansas staff that is a big statistics-driven staff, you can't just write off the fact that the statistics show that this is happening when this player is on the court. Yeah, it doesn't help that Arkansas just totally crapped the bed in two games, but also this happened when he was on the court. The cause and effect there says that something needs to change. He isn't a score first guard, but when he's only giving you six assistable passes a game, then that also means that he's not doing the job that he's out there for.
So I'm looking at Hooplins right now again, and instead of just focusing in on those two games last week, I went big picture in SEC play. The offense is operating 0.92 points per possession over 335 possessions with him on the floor, 1.06 points per possession in 154 offensive possessions with him sitting. Like Arkansas's shooting the three at a 41% clip when he's off the floor. And when he's on the floor, effective field goal percentage is 45. Two-point field goal percentage is 45. Three-point percentage is 30. I mean, the numbers are just – they're not there. And I don't want this to turn into a Jalen Tate bashing pod. But
we do have other questions.
You just went through a bad week, man. Like, you've got to maybe think outside the box a little bit and just – I don't know. Maybe go a different direction at the point guard spot.
You got to self-evaluate. Try something different.
Yeah, absolutely have to self-evaluate. No doubt about it.
All right, moving on, Scotty. Justin Smith made an appearance last week ahead of schedule, which I'm sure Musselman and his staff and the entire Razorbacks are excited about. I mean, he brings a dynamic to the team that you just don't have when he's not there. But will Justin Smith be a net positive? So when you look at the plus minus for this week in a game against Auburn at home and at Vanderbilt, will he be a net positive is what I'm trying to say during this week?
Yeah, I don't know as far as like Wednesday's game, because it was pretty evident at Alabama. I mean, obviously coming off ankle surgery and you miss 2 weeks and you really can't do anything with a foot injury. You know what I mean? Like, to get in shape, like, you can't run on a treadmill. You can't do the underwater treadmill, anything like that. Basically all you can do is rehab. And then he ran out on the floor, you know, basically straight out of rehab. And he was winded, like just absolutely winded. And his decision-making, I think, fell off a little bit. And he's a tough, physical, imposing guy, but you know, when you're tired. I mean, he was probably as tired as he'd been in a while, and he played less than 20 minutes. But like, his movement off the ball was lacking. Like, he wasn't. I remember he had that one backdoor cut early in the second half. But that was early in the second half. You know what I mean? Like, he had just gotten a pretty good break at halftime. I don't know that he's going to be himself, or he might still be a shell of himself on Wednesday. And one thing that concerns me is that whoever he's matched up with is going to be able to shoot it. And so that foot is going to be tested, you know, getting out to the perimeter, contesting shots. And then, you know, if a guy tries to blow by him, he's got to move those feet. He's got to move that injured foot, surgically repaired foot or ankle. And that could be a challenge for sure. And Auburn wants to get up and down. And I think he might be more himself against Vanderbilt on Saturday. I think that's when Eric Musselman said that, you know, he thinks he could, you know, maybe be back in that 85 to 90% range, which I think that's when Justin can help you the most, is when he's fully healthy or close to healthy.
All right, moving on. I agree, by the way, with you. It's going to be a tough assignment for Justin to come back against Auburn, so we'll have to see how he responds and how healthy that ankle really is. Connor Vanover has been the talk of the town a little bit this week as well, just from not playing. So, Scotty, do you believe Connor Vanover will play more than 15 minutes in a game for the rest of this season?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think so. And you know, Eric Musselman on his radio show last night said something that lines up with the numbers. You know, when Arkansas has Connor in the lineup, like, they're more efficient than when he's not. And he just creates, he creates a mismatch, like whether he's, you know, playing well on the defensive end or not, like he's still an offensive mismatch. But he's got to, he's got to find his touch from the perimeter, which is, has not been there since when? I mean, I don't remember the last time he had like multiple, you know, perimeter jumpers in a game. But I think Arkansas can maybe use that first Auburn game as an offensive blueprint. You know, he ran the floor fairly well in that game. You know, he got fouled several times at the rim. Obviously, you want to see him finish. As I don't know if you know this, but he's 7'3". And
wow.
Shocker, right? Newsflash. But I think they can kind of use that as a blueprint. I think he's got a chance to be on the floor significantly against Auburn. I don't know if that means 30 minutes or not. I would highly doubt it. But I think he played in the higher 20s the first time around. There are going to be teams that Arkansas matches up with better with Connor on the floor, certainly in SEC play. Just Alabama and LSU, just that's just not it. That's not the matchups for him.
No, apparently not. All right, Scotty, looking at the guy that you said you might want to see running point, Moses Moody. Do you believe Moses Moody through 1 year, or not even a full year, is a better shooter than Isaiah Joe?
I don't know. Like, you sent that question last night, and I thought about it for a while. Like, Moses obviously is very gifted three-level scorer, and his perimeter jumper, like, it's been better than anybody else's on the roster, and I don't think it's really even that close or debatable. I don't know that he's the shooter Isaiah Joe is. Like, Isaiah Joe set the freshman record or set the program record for threes in a season as a freshman. And then he missed six games the next year and still hit 94. And he had unbelievably deep range, like inside half court range. I just always go back to his high school coach telling me that when Isaiah was a sophomore, he said, if you got a clean look at the rim here inside half court, you have my blessing. I don't know that Moses is there yet. I think Moses is a little bit, not that Isaiah took a bunch of bad shots, but Moses, I think, he's pretty heady about what a quality look is and you know, how he can, you know, find space to get a shot off. I'm going to say no for now, but I mean, we got to remember Isaiah was just out of this world from deep.
So I thought no as well, right off the bat. And then as I need to back up my opinion, right? I need to figure it out. Well, so Isaiah Joe for his career, which was 60 games at the University of Arkansas, he averaged 15.2 points a game. And then let's go to his 3-point percentage. He attempted just over 9 3-pointers a game, making 3.5 of them. So roughly 37%. Moses is averaging more points per game, 17.6 versus the 15.2 that Isaiah was. But then also you go down to his 3-point, he only takes 5 3-pointers a game, but makes 2 of them. So his 3-point percentage
is just, the volume is different. That's why I think it took me, I just had to think about it. Like that, like Isaiah is a 3-point specialist. Moses is more gifted offensively in other areas, especially like getting to the rim and then pull, you know, getting off that mid-range jumper. He's more well-rounded than Isaiah was as a freshman. But Isaiah is still the better shooter, like just a volume shooter. And that's not to knock Moses at all. Like if Arkansas didn't have his perimeter shooting right now, they would be in some deep trouble.
Yep.
But it's just, they're just two different players. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like Moses is Mason Jones light.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're just completely perimeter shooters. But both guys have an eye for quality looks. I will say that.
So when you think about 2-point, How many shots over his career at Arkansas, how many two-point attempts did Isaiah have per game, do you think?
I would say he probably took 4 or 5 a game.
No. 2.8 is his 2.8. Average. Moses threw 14 games with the Razorbacks, 7.4.
Yeah. Moses took 18 the other day against Alabama.
He's averaging 5 more two-point shots. A few less three-pointers, but he's making the three-point. He's shooting at a better clip than Isaiah was in Isaiah's sophomore year and for his career. Now, in Isaiah's freshman year, he shot 41% from three-point land, but that was also
– Yeah, that's just where looking at the numbers can be a little tricky because it's just – Isaiah was just volume. He was volume from three. And Moses, you know, he can take – bunch of threes. Like we saw one game, I think he went 3 for 10 or 4 for 10. But I mean, he's going to find a nice, like when Moses, I feel like, is at his best, he's taking 5 or 6 a game and he's doing other things well. Whereas Isaiah, it was kind of normal, you know, for him to launch 9 to 12 a game. You know what I mean? Just completely different players, but both very talented shooters.
That was an interesting dive for me because I just figured that Isaiah Joe is just an all-around better shooter than Moses was, just because it was Moses' first year in the SEC, but also it's just an interesting dive because of how different they really are, and you don't think about them being different. You just draw the comparison in your mind, and you don't really think about that Moses can get into the lane. He can make his own shot. And not that Isaiah couldn't, but that wasn't the role that Isaiah was playing. It's kind of interesting. Dive into the numbers. All right. One last question here, Scotty, before we wrap it up on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. We're going big picture. Would you believe Arkansas will finish the SEC slate at above 500?
That's a good question. I've got the schedule pulled up in front of me, and I'll try to write this down as we go. So Arkansas is 2-4 as of right now.
2-4. They're playing Auburn at home.
I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't think this team is going to continue to play as bad as it has lately, but they've got to pick it up defensively. Absolutely.
Vanderbilt on the road.
Should win that one too.
Ole Miss at home.
Yes, I'll give them that one. Ole Miss has not impressed me a bit this year.
No, me either. Then at Oklahoma State, that doesn't count. Mississippi State at home. Texas A&M at home.
Those are going to be two tough games because both of those teams are going to want to muck it up like on both ends of the floor. And I don't think Arkansas likes that.
Right.
One bit. I'm probably going to give Arkansas a loss against Mississippi State, and then I think they'll beat Texas A&M. I think A&M is pretty limited offensively. They're dead last in the SEC in terms of offensive efficiency. Like, they've been pretty terrible. They're scoring 87.3 points per 100 possessions in the league, and they're last in turnover rate, effective field goal percentage, and 13th and shooting the three. So I think Arkansas beat A&M.
Okay, so after A&M goes at Kentucky, at Missouri.
I think those are both losses.
Florida.
At home.
Yep.
That's a toss-up. I'm going to give Arkansas the benefit of the doubt there. I think they can handle Florida.
At Texas A&M.
Nope, that never goes well. Trips to Reed Arena, that's a trap.
Yeah, they never do. Alabama, LSU, both at home.
Alabama's going to be a loss. And I think they can bounce back against LSU. I think Justin Smith will be healthy for that game. Arkansas could have some help in that game too with Bebe. He could be back at that point. That's a healthy Justin Smith and then another 6'9" frontline guy could be a positive. I'll give Arkansas a win against LSU at home.
And then at South Carolina. So I kind of went through almost worst case scenario here. You got to win the next three. So I gave them the fact that they'll win Auburn, at Vanderbilt, and Ole Miss. I say if they split Mississippi State, Texas A&M, both of those games at home, lose to Kentucky and Missouri, lose to A&M, and split that Alabama-LSU series, that's still – that gives them 1, 2, 3, 4. That's 5 extra losses. So that is going to put them at 9 conference losses.
Yeah, so I've got – right now I've got Arkansas 8-10 in the league. So I guess I would say, no, they're not going to finish 500.
That's tough.
And that was giving Arkansas wins over Florida and LSU at home, which those are going to be really tough games, really tough.
It's not looking good anymore. Your outlook changes for sure. Just a fun little exercise to do there. I still think that there's a possibility. I mean, obviously there's a possibility, but I think that there is – it's within the realm of possibility and an easy possibility that this team figures something out down the stretch. They still have tons of talent on this team. You just have to put it all together, and that comes from the chemistry within the team, finding everybody's roles, and then hitting shots and executing. And Arkansas has not done all three of those.
No, they really haven't. They really haven't. I mean, they've got to put it together pretty quick because, I mean, this is a stretch in the schedule where it kind of favors you. You know what I mean? So you've got to get back on track fairly soon, as my dog is going crazy in my backyard. I told you he was going to make an appearance at some point.
Well,
I just wanted to ask you about the Auburn game on Wednesday. Like, Auburn is just such a completely different team with Sharif Cooper. And I was looking at Auburn's KenPom page, and Sharif Cooper right now, he's got a usage rate of 40%, which is it's crazy. I mean, Eric Musselman likened his usage rate to James Harden, you know, when he was with the Rockets. And while his usage rate is high, he takes almost 37% of their shots, or has taken that percentage of shots in his 3 games back. He's got an assist rate, like he's assisting on 63% of Auburn scores when he's on the floor. But something that I found that was pretty interesting yesterday, I was looking at HoopLens. In the 3 games that Sharif Cooper has played for Auburn, Auburn's shooting 23% from 3 when he's on the floor. That's pretty interesting. But at the same time, their 2-point field goal percentage is like 62%. It's crazy. So he's like getting in the middle of defenses, creating shot opportunities clearly from 3, because Auburn's not going to stop shooting threes ever. They could go 0-for-30 in a game and they'll still launch 30 more the next game. That's just Bruce Pearl is going to be adamant. You know, they got to get their 3-point attempts up. But part of that 23% that Auburn's shooting with Sharif Cooper back is Sharif Cooper. You know, he's one of 16 from 3, and I think he's missed his last 11. Yeah, he's missed his last 9 threes the last 2 games, and he went 1-for-7 against Alabama. But he's so dynamic. Like he had 8 assists against Kentucky, 12 against Georgia, 9 against Alabama, and his usage rate was, I mean, you average that out, I guess that's around 40%, but. Who does Arkansas put on him? What do you think Arkansas's defensive plan is with him? Because, I mean, I think one of the do you believe bullet points that I sent, I think, was do we think Devo is the best defensive match for him? Because they like to run him in ball screens and just let him operate that way. But he's not shooting 3 very well. Do you sag off of him a little bit and maybe try to cut off some of his his driving lanes and his, you know, opportunities to, you know, penetrate and kick.
Jalen Tate was billed as your best defender. Whether that still holds true or not, I don't know. But that was the guy that was supposed to be your lockdown defender, your Jimmy Witt, if you will, from last year's team. I don't know if he has lived up to that hype. But that's an interesting point that you bring up about Devo. He wouldn't have been the first person to come to the top of my mind, but you might try and lure Cooper into shooting the three ball. But this could also be another one of those situations where Connor Vanover sits on the baseline and lets the guy that he's guarding against LSU shoot threes, and then that guy makes two. And that's really, you don't want Cooper to heat up from the three-point line. So I will bet you that they're going to, if they know that stat as well, and they're going to at least try and get him to attempt three. So it might be worth putting Devo on him.
The reason I say that is just from watching Devo, and Eric Musselman has alluded to this before, that, you know, considering that Auburn is, a lot of their offense is predicated on that high ball screen, Devo is really good at not dying on ball screens, and he's long and lanky, and he does a good job of not getting picked by them. You know what I mean? Like, just not getting pancaked by one. And we saw that in the first Auburn game. Like, he got picked off a little bit at the top of the key on an Allen Flanagan ball screen. And then he hustles back, gets into the play, and creates a turnover in the restricted area. Like, that's not a play that a lot of guys can make, especially freshmen. But that, Jimmy Dykes said that was one of the most impressive individual defensive plays that he'd seen in college basketball to that point. And I think you go with that. Like, he's not a guy that's going to die on ball screens. He's going to give you good effort to get back into the play. And Devo's quick enough and quick twitch enough that I think he can, it's going to take a lot of work, but I think he can work around those ball screens and contain, I don't know if contain's even the right word, but just pester Sharif Cooper, you know, as well as he can. I mean, he can put his length to good use. Like, Devo's what, 6'3"? 6'4" with a pretty good wingspan. Sharif Cooper's not the biggest guy in the world. Like, he's 6'1", and he's 6'1", 180 pounds. You know, you throw some length at him and agitate him. I think you'll probably see a good mix of Devo, you know, matching up with him and Jalen Tate too. And I don't know if this is the game to go matchup zone or not, but that would be another way possibly to keep to get Connor on the floor and maybe try to deter some of those 2-point looks that Auburn's been so effective at with Cooper, you know, back in the lineup.
Be interesting to see how they play it, without a doubt. All right, good stuff, Scotty. Appreciate you joining us here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America.
No doubt about it, buddy. Arkansas's got to bounce back this week, and then, you know, you get through Auburn, and then you got to go to Memorial in Nashville and play on that funky court. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I don't think that Vanderbilt's allowing anybody but family, friends and family into the game. So,
right. Yeah. So Arkansas's got to manufacture some energy. I mean, and they've got to do it. They got to do it quick.
You got to do it now. You got to,
when you travel, you got to bring it. You got to bring it yourself. And, you know, I'm looking at Vandy's KenPom page now. They're giving up 119 points for 100 possessions. They're dead last in the league in a lot of defensive categories. I mean, that's a game that, you know, even though you're struggling right now and you're trying to figure some things out, like, that's a game that, you know, even if you're not all there and you're not perfectly in sync, that's a game that you got to have, or your tournament hopes are going to get dashed, you know, sooner than later.
Yes. Big, big week for the Razorbacks upcoming. We'll see how.
A big week every week. We said last week was big week. This week is a bigger week because of how flat Arkansas was last week.
Because of how last week went. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, for Scotty Bordelon, I am Seth Campbell saying thank you so much for joining us here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. If you like the podcast, make sure to like, subscribe, and rate us wherever you are listening to us right now. You can also share us with a friend. We would greatly appreciate that. If you want more Arkansas Razorback coverage, you can see everything that Scotty is writing, as well as our entire team of Razorback reporters on wholehogsports.com. Well, for Scotty Borderline, again, I am Seth Campbell saying so long, and we will see you back here next week.